Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Sophie. Welcome back to our weekly podcast. We appreciate your listening and your questions and your insights and all that good stuff. Today, we are going to be talking about a very touchy subject called the back-to-school thing. So it's a really tough time of the year for a lot of people, believe it or not. You don't think it's going to really hit you hard, and all of a sudden it just creeps up on you from your child who's going off to nursery school or a kid who's going off to college, and you have an empty nest. So we're going to be talking to a really talented expert today who's going to help us navigate some of the stuff that happens when we go back to school. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Dr. Sophie. We are going to be talking about going back to school. We have an expert who will be joining us today, but we're going to really look at the intricacies of what it really means and what really happens when we send our children off to school, because it's not just kind of what happens to our children, it's also what happens to us as parents. What are the transitions that parents are going to go through? What is it going to feel like? What does it do to us when we have to give up a summer break and all those kinds of great feelings? Can parents do anything to make sure that their children are going to get along better with their friends this year than maybe they did last year? We're going to learn a lot of these kinds of things. We're going to talk about them and see if there's things we can do to prevent or to make things better overall. So come on, give me a call. If you need me, 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. Each caller will receive a free signed copy of my book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Dr. Sophie. We are talking about back to school, and that's our topic for the podcast this week. Joining me is a expert, very talented, very well written, Dr. Jane Timmons Mitchell. She's a clinical child psychologist in Cleveland, Ohio. She is senior research associate at the Begun Center for Violence Prevention, Education, and Research, and a whole other ton of things. Dr. Timmons Mitchell, you with me?
With you.
Thank you. You too. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Back to school. It's a little strange sometimes, don't you think, for parents and kids and everybody? I'm sure teachers,
absolutely.
Too. And teachers, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. My children are out of school now, but it's very funny. It's like it gets ingrained in you, and at the back-to-school time, you still have these kind of, you know, sort of post-reactions
right.
to, oh, my goodness, I need to be looking at a million papers and going to get supplies and thinking about all that they're going to be facing. It's a very big thing for both parents and children.
So is it like PTSD?
A bit, I think so.
So, I mean, there's a ton of questions I have for you, but like, so for the parent perspective, is there anything that parents can do preemptively to look at the transitions, make them smoother? Is there a time within like weeks before school starts when you know your start date you should prepare? Like, what can we tell parents?
Yeah. I always try to tell people about a month ahead of time that they should really look at their child's sleep pattern, because as you mentioned earlier, a lot of times in the summer, kids get into this pattern where they're staying up later and later and sleeping later and later in the day, and that may work for summer, but for most kids, when they go back to school, there is a hard start early in the morning, and one of the problems that we see you know, clinically is that a lot of kids get irritated and, you know, suffer symptoms that could be exemplary of depression just related to not having enough sleep.
Yeah, and, I totally agree with that.
And, you know, I was looking up on the CDC website, and the CDC recommends something that when I talk about it with parents, they're just completely shocked. Kids in school need a lot of sleep.
Yes.
And children younger than, say, about 12 or 13 need about 10 hours of sleep, and children 13 and up need 9 to 10 hours of sleep. And one of the things that is happening more and more is that in addition to not, you know, going to bed early enough so that they can get up early enough, kids are taking their devices to bed with them. And so they have this this interrupted sleep, you know, where a friend will text them at like 2 in the morning and they wake up and they
Crazy.
Are on the device, which interrupts the sleep. And so the sleep deprivation that, you know, we're seeing in students, that shows up and creates problems for both students and parents around back-to-school time, I think, is one of the chief things that everybody can do something about.
Absolutely.
But you kind of have to start early.
All right, and you're saying about, 30 days or a month, start to look at the pattern and kind of get it to where it needs
to be. And I know it's frustrating now because most people are already in school. But I was thinking about that because, even though they've already started back to school, there are all these interruptions
right.
in the school calendar. So essentially, you're going back to school each Monday
right.
or after a short break, like maybe Thanksgiving is coming up or winter break, and they can get back into these same patterns. So there's always an opportunity to try to reset it.
Got it. Yeah, that's very important. How about eating, too? Should parents start to, get away from all the hot doggy things that we did all summer and start to get to
healthier
Right,
eat healthily, but also there's some lovely, again, the CDC, I think, summarizes it pretty well on its website, which is, I think, maybe cdc.gov or something like that. There are things you can do for sleep hygiene. And one of the things in sleep hygiene is not eating too late in the evening. Certainly eating healthier, whatever you eat, but not eating too late and not having, caffeinated beverages and things like that, because those will keep you up.
Okay. I mean, that's really helpful stuff, because the earlier you start, the transition is smoother, I would assume, right?
Right, because there is also research that suggests that you can't really, I'll see kids in my clinical practice, and it'll be like a week before school, and they'll have been sleeping till like 11 in the morning, and then they have to get up at, maybe 7, and they'll say, it'll be fine, I can just do it. But there's this research that says that you can't really back up, especially the time that you wake up, more than about half an hour a day. And so if you divide, the 4 hours by half an hour a day, you're going to run out of time if you're only starting it a
right.
week before.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense, but that's really good info. Tell me something. What can parents or should parents do anything, and if there is something to do, what do they do to really ensure their kids are going to kind of gel socially? Because there's all that oftentimes anxiety of even, especially with smaller kids, going to a new place or a new group of friends, and how do you work yourself into that? Any tips?
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it? Because some of it's known for kids who are going back to school, and some of it's unknown because there could always be new kids or you could be in a different class or with different peers. I think, for the most part, kids are pretty well equipped to go in and figure out what's going on in the situation, and they're pretty good at sizing up, what they need and who to hang out with and who to stay away from. An exception to that, I think, is, if they start telling parents and other important people about actually being bullied, which unfortunately happens a lot and happens most now that we know of in middle school, although I think continues to high school, because those are things, that can really interfere. But I think it's tricky because on the one hand, you don't want to insert yourself as a parent too much into the social situation, unless there's a difficulty. But on the other hand, you want to kind of try to be aware of it. I think a way that, I remember doing that when my kids were younger, and I know that a lot of people I work with do, is just to try to really supervise, some of the contact with your kids, and especially, with their friends, if possible with their parents. That becomes more difficult, though, with the advent of all the devices.
Yeah, I mean, technology should be nowhere near someone's bedroom, I would assume. But,
child. I mean, and this is a really tough sell, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
When I work with kids who aren't getting enough sleep and, they're worried about what's going on with their friends, they want to take these screens with them every place, trying to get a contract that provides for, essentially putting the screen someplace before you go to bed is really a tough thing to do sometimes.
That's very difficult.
You get really belligerent about it.
It's very difficult. What would we tell parents who are noticing or hearing or from their children or whatever that their children are having a hard time at school from a social perspective? They're really having a hard time. They're having a hard time, integrating, or they're either the odd man out, that kind of thing. What do we tell parents to do? Should they get involved? Should they wait? Is it too early? Is, December the time to do it? How long do you wait, or what do you do?
Yeah, I think it depends on what it is and what you're hearing. But I think if it's at school, I think a thing that the parent might do is to contact either the teacher or a counselor, support person like that, because it's always helpful to see what it looks like from the other perspective. You know, sometimes kids will be saying things that are concerning to parents, and they may be concerning to the kids, but it's really helpful to know from the people who are observing this in action, you know, what they're seeing, and if they see it as a problem. Because it sends you sort of in different directions depending on what you hear.
Oh, okay. And is it different by, you know, elementary versus middle school age kids, high school, for parents?
Sure. In terms of the level of parental involvement,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
To respect the kids' developmental differences. You know, the parents are used to be more involved when kids enter school and elementary school, and that's great because that's the time when kids may need more. But I think the difficult thing is that as kids get older, as they become adolescents, parents want to back off to respect their developing autonomy, and that's a great idea. The problem is that you don't want to back off so far that you've lost the ability to set rules.
Right, and I think that's a huge, important point, because that balance is tough to find sometimes, because mm-hmm. you have a threatening, aggressive teenager in your house, and you don't
right.
really want to, you know, to provoke that, but you also know that inside is that little kid who probably can't protect himself.
Right. I know I've heard from a bunch of the teens and their families that I'm working with this summer as we've been approaching back to school. You know, the refrain is, well, you don't trust me that I'll know how to do it. And, you know, the issue is, well, it's not that they don't trust you. It's that there are skills that have to be developed and put in place and practiced. And, you know, we need to form a partnership and work on this together. So it's really tricky, because I think in some situations you want to listen very carefully to your child and, you know, take very seriously everything that they say. But in other situations, you have to learn, you know, when to sort of put on your earplugs.
Right.
And not be dragged so far afield by
right.
their protests.
Yeah, it's a balance, and you only know it when you're
yeah.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play you a voicemail we got. Hold on one sec.
Hi, yes. My son started high school this year. He's a freshman, and last year he went to the public middle school. This year, my wife and I decided to send them to the private all-boys Catholic high school because their academic reputation is much better, and we think it's going to serve him well to get into college. However, he's having a tough time transitioning, and I'm wondering how we can gain his trust back. We want him to trust us that this is the right decision for him and it's going to work out. Any advice would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
What do you think about that? I'm sure that happens often.
Sure, sure. Those transitions, and especially when kids change schools. Well, I think one of the things to do is to be very aware of the things that that your child does really well. So if your child has been involved in athletics at the other school, you know, can they be involved in athletics at the new school? Or just to pick up somehow on their interests and let them express them. Another thing I think that is sometimes helpful is if there's any way of preserving the relationships as much as possible with the people that were friends at the old school, you know, to be involved in social activities or something structured that can sort of form a bridge. I know it's often really tough, and I think, you know, the combination of keeping what was great about the old situation as much as you can and then getting really involved in some special sub-interest that matches
Yeah,
interest.
I'm sure it's a little scary for parents because they say, well, if we maintain all those old relationships, how do we make room for new ones? And then why did we really leave?
Mm. Well, unless there was a problem with the old ones, but maybe not all of the old ones.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, it's that thing you learn in Girl Scouts, you know, make new friends but keep the old ones
right,
over
exactly.
and the others go. I mean, there is something to that. There's a reason why old adages are. As they are.
Yeah, they have a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read you an email. We got John from Fall River, Massachusetts, is asking, my son is 11 years old and his school has a recess period where the kids have an opportunity to play outside. He plays football with his friends usually and has been taken to the principal's office a few times for getting in fights while playing. However, these fights are always with his friends, kids he invites over the house even. Personally, I think the administration is overreacting. However, I don't want to let my son think it's okay and to disagree with his teachers. Any advice on how to deal with this situation appropriately?
Wow, that's tricky.
Yeah.
I would imagine that it sounds like he's already talked with the school administration. because I guess I'm wondering a little bit about the definition of fights. But I also do think that it's really important always to back up the rules at the school, provided that that's the school that your kid goes to and is going to go to. And then finding a way to make that okay with your kid, that's sometimes the really hard part.
So that's so important that you just said that. So tell us more, like, why is it that important to back up the rules of the school? What is that saying to your child?
Sure. Well, because if you don't back up the rules of the school, you're teaching your kid, what are you teaching them, right? That they're allowed to participate in something and make different rules for themselves than other people are held to. That doesn't work very well. I mean, in life, that doesn't work very well. You know, we all have to follow rules. We may not always like the rules, and sometimes we can work to change them. But if we're part of something and it has rules, we kind of have to play by the rules. You know, in a sports situation, you have to know the rules, otherwise you can't play successfully. And if you are going to be successful, you really have to learn them and follow them. So figuring it out is always, I think, the balance.
It's tough, but I also think it's important to back up the rules of the school because it says to your child, you approve of the school, you approve of their way of thinking and implementing their discipline and their stuff, and that it's a safe place then for your kid to be.
Exactly, because at some point you may want the school to enforce the rules on behalf of your child.
Right.
And it won't make any sense if they've been argued against.
It goes both ways.
Yep.
I want to play you another voicemail. Hang on.
Oh, now. Look, my daughter is very vibrant and creative, and she's only 6 years old, but I can tell she marches to the beat of her own drummer, and I love that about her. I taught her that way, but on one hand, I don't want to get in trouble at school for not being, you know, like the other kids, but on the other hand, I don't want the rules and the guidelines of school to stunt her creativity, so I wonder if you have any advice on how to balance the two. All right, thank you.
What do you think about that?
Good point. Well, if I can just wear my parent hat for just a second, okay?
Sure.
So I have two grown children who are, you know, reasonably successful in what they're doing. And with my son especially, we really had to do a lot of enforcing the school rules. And there was a little bit of concern about, you know, how's that going to work with creativity? But like we were saying before, you know, we realized that it was much more important to get him started in the, you know, doing what needs to be done mode. And generally speaking for kids, you know, the trade-off, I understand how parents are concerned about the trade-off, but kids who are creative are going to find a way to be creative and successful. In our family, we do music at a high level, and both of my kids, having grown up learning how to follow the rules, have done a lot of performing, even though their careers are not in performing music. Creativity will be there, and creative people will find ways to be creative. And I think if you looked at it in terms of a cost-benefit, the cost of not following the rules is so much greater than what would happen to their creativity if they do follow the rules.
Right.
You know, if they're truly, truly creative, they'll get to a place where they're going to find a way to express that, and it will be just completely obvious, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, that is really nice. But that's a good point you're making. I have a question. What do you tell parents when there's that place that you come to when you hear from the school, like, little Johnny's having a hard time functioning, classroom, behavior, learning? When is there time that you cross over to, should we get him some help? And then what do you do? Do you know, like, what do we tell parents?
My experience with that is that schools will generally recommend a plan, and generally the plans are pretty good. However, you know, there are times where either because of disagreements or because of issues that, you know, come up and need more attention, where parents, you know, often seek out counseling, independent counseling, and then at that point, I think it's a good point to involve the providers, you know, on a team where you talk with everybody at the school and the parents. The goal is so that everybody can come to, you know, some kind of really helpful resolution and all be on the same page.
Okay, so it really boils down to trusting the school. And if they're saying he's having an issue,
right,
it might not feel good to hear, but you
right.
got to get past that reaction and not live in denial.
Absolutely. I mean, the trust stuff is that's a whole big thing. We have to trust our kids. We have to trust that the people who are working with our kids are doing the best they can for our kids. We have to trust ourselves that we have some modicum of understanding of what to do. That actually may be the hardest one.
Right.
The one that people second guess the most. And yet, you know, on the other side, realize that, I mean, trust isn't absolute. You only have to trust what needs to happen in a particular situation. And for most situations, it isn't maybe as much as you think. It's to
right.
get through to the next thing that has to happen.
Very nice. So, Dr. Jane Timmons Mitchell, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, as you said, I'm a clinical psychologist, and I have been for 30 years. I have my own practice here in Cleveland. When I'm not doing psychology stuff, I sing in the Cleveland Orchestra Chorus, and have been on tour with them in Europe and stuff like that. It's a lovely balance to, you know, regular other activities.
Sounds good. So, like, I see you've been all over the media everywhere. You're writing a book?
Yeah, we're writing a book on suicide prevention. I do research with the, it's a SAMHSA-funded grant. It's a state suicide prevention grant for Ohio. And we're excited because what we're trying to do is to connect some of the new community best practices with what people who in hospital-based settings do in their various services. And those are two groups of people who don't always
get together,
you know, intermingle.
Yeah.
So we're excited to be able to provide that
very nice
forum.
When do you think it'll be done?
It's supposed to be out a year from October. Fingers crossed.
Very nice. A lot of work.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your patience of waiting and all of your great advice. And where can we find you today? What little website?
There's a website for our center at Case. It's the Gunn Center at Case Western Reserve University, also through the Mandel School. The Mandel School of Applied Social Sciences is the ninth rated social work school in the country. That's kind of where I hang out.
Got ya. We'll be looking for you. I'm sure our callers are going to have a lot of questions, so we'll be shooting them to you.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you.
The opportunity.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Great. Thanks.
Bye.
You too.
So that was our guest expert, Dr. Jane Timmons Mitchell. She's a clinical child psychologist in Cleveland at Case Western Reserve University. Very talented, very well-studied, written practitioner. Gave us some really great advice about back to school. And I think the four key things I would like you to take away today from our discussion is, number one, begin about 30 days, you guys, looking at your child's sleep. No matter how old that child is, it could be a big child. But 30 days is the time to start looking, because our kids need to have a sleep pattern that is really going to make the transition to school a lot smoother, because a tired, irritable child is a grouchy, unable to learn child usually. So we need to get our kids to sleep, and 30 days is the time to start before school starts. And what Dr. Timmons Mitchell told us today, which is very interesting, is children 12 and under need about 10 hours of sleep, and children 13 and greater need about 9 to 10 hours. And take a look. I'm not sure all our children are even somewhere in that ballpark. So let's do it. And also, no technology in bed. Number two, socially integrate your children. Trust that they know what to do and they can be working themselves into their friendships and their groups. They're fully equipped. But if they're not, you need to get involved, but you need to get involved in a certain way. So looking at the age of your child, their developmental standings and stages will dictate to you the level of involvement you need to have. Smaller children, you need to be more involved. Older children, you need to be back away a little bit, but supportive. So keep an eye on it, but trust your kids. They have the tools. Number three, transitioning or transferring schools is always an issue, whether you're leaving one school and going to another because it's elementary to middle, or you're leaving one school to go to another because there was a conflict or an issue. The problem is we have to be able to make a bridge between the old and the new, because the new may not be as embracing as we'd like it to be right away. So keeping some good, solid connections that were healthy in the old place will help make newer ones at the new place take on greater root and effect, but that way your child is not without something that they used to have until they rebuild it somewhere else. A tough time. And the fourth thing that I think is very important is always back up the rules of your school for your child. Your child needs to know that you believe in what the school believes or what the school is putting out there, because that will give your child a nonverbal message that you think that place is a safe place for your child to be. You approve of the way that they handle things and deal with things and teach things, and it all makes it a lot better because when a child trusts their school, they do much better. And when parents trust the school, the child does much better. And when the child and the parents trust the school does much better. So everybody does better with that trust. So really back up your school rules and let your kids know you believe in them. Overall, again, trust kids, trust your school, trust yourselves, because that's really where it has to be. And we learned something really important today about this trust from Dr. Timmons Mitchell. And she tells us that trust doesn't have to be a global, bigger picture trust of whatever. It has to be trust for that situation, that you trust something's going to be handled in that moment or whatever it is. Because people struggle with trust a lot, and they think they have to trust everything about everything. And it's not necessarily true. In this case, it's trust the issue, and it will be handled, and that's the end of it. So success at school and getting your children back to school in a seamless way is trust. So thank you for listening. Thank you for all your calls and your emails and your voicemails today. Grab my podcast anytime. They're available on my website at www.drsophie.com and on iTunes. My website again, www.drsophie.com. My phone app is available in the iTunes store. Go check it out. My voicemail, 1-855-767-4966, is always on for you 24/7. My book is available to you, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook. Visit iTunes to download the full version of Andy Grammer's Keep Your Head Up. And the most important thing is don't forget to sweep. Thank you.